Located on the sea islands of South Carolina and Georgia are communities of people who are descendants of enslaved Africans. They have a unique culture that is directly linked to West Africa. In South Carolina, this group of African Americans and the language they speak are referred to as Gullah. In Georgia, they are called Geechee. Many historians believe the word Gullah comes from Angola, a West African country from which many of the slaves came. Another idea is that Gullah is from the Gola, a tribe found near the border of Liberia and Sierra Leone, West Africa. Although the exact origin of the word is not known, most historians agree that the Gullah people and their language have African roots. Join us at the table as we discuss this important piece of Southern culture. Welcome to the Steel Magnolias Podcast. We are two sisters here to have uplifting conversations about life in the South.
The South is full of beautiful diversity in landscape, people groups, and culture, and we want to showcase each part. We've got plenty of room at our table, so pull up your chair.
Welcome back to the table. I'm Laura Beth.
I'm Lainey.
And we are here to discuss a very, very important part to Southern culture that I didn't know about for years. And I say that because that's a hard thing to say, knowing that I went to Charleston, South Carolina for years. And that is a very prevalent piece of culture in Charleston. But you know what?
In your defense, you were just going to be with friends and be at the beach. So you weren't digging at right. all about anything important.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm not putting you down for that.
Sometimes you just don't know. Just, yeah, it was more of a trip to see friends than a sightseeing trip kind of thing. That's true. Thanks. But hey, we love discovering all
Now you all smart and learned.
I like to discover all different parts of Southern culture, and some of it is fresh and new to us, but we got to sit down with our new friend, Lynette White, who founded the Plantation Singers, and they are based in Charleston. They are an a cappella group and a percussion gospel group that actually formed for the preservation of Gullah culture. So they spread that information and education at schools and
libraries and
hotel lobbies.
Yeah, I mean, wherever they get an invite, really.
Yeah. And they mostly use music to explain their culture, and that comes through in spiritual songs. And it's just a really neat way for the group to share what's impactful to them, because you can tell it still is. It's it's a telling of history of old, and then
it's like, this is who we are.
It's who we are. Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is you were getting literally taste of Gullah culture when you were making those trips to Charleston and not knowing it. You just didn't know it was Gullah.
Exactly.
Because it's that thread is through everything.
Yes.
And I think it's fascinating that, be it in the arts community or the food ways of the region, what's called Southern is a lot of it Gullah.
Right, exactly.
And so we'll get more into that later. Yeah. But you were getting Gullah culture literally ingested in you. You just didn't know it was Gullah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So we want to give credit where credit is
due. Exactly, exactly. And a lot of times I hear Gullah Geechee all kind of just rolls off the tongue together.
I say it like that.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to leave anybody out.
Yes.
It really is, for the most part, one in that, you know, came from West and Central Africa.
Yeah.
As enslaved people.
Right.
Came to the region mostly because they knew how to tend rice.
Yes. Yes. And that is the reason that they even were not just the slaves probably were brought to Charleston, being a port city.
Right.
Huge population of slaves came through Charleston. I think it's like 40% or something.
Part of their history.
Yes, it is. But I'm sure the reason that they stayed there was because
if you were from that region, you knew how to tend rice mostly.
Yes.
And cotton and indigo and the things that were happening in Charleston.
Yes. So, and Carolina gold rice is what was being harvested big time from those plantations. So, and that's what made those, you know, crop owners rich was the rice.
That's right.
So, yes, Carolina gold rice and,
which, you know, is still grown there today.
And it is so good.
And it's so good.
So, yeah, as we mentioned, there's a couple of different sort of sources that have different ways they think Gullah came to be. As you heard in my intro, you could kind of hear how it could have come. It's just almost like it's just morphed a little bit, maybe from Angola, maybe from the tribe. Who knows? But it's not too far off base. And when we even say South Carolina and Georgia, I mean, we're talking about very close proximity geographically on that coast. So, you know, it's all just very close in nature and origin. But I just wanted to mention that sometimes you hear Gullah, sometimes you hear Geechee, sometimes you hear Gullah Geechee.
Yeah.
So when we sat with Lynette, she focuses a lot on what Gullah. She would just call Gullah. So,
but if you hear Geechee, yeah, they're neighbors and
they are very much neighbors. That's a good way to put that.
Very similar backgrounds.
Yeah. So we had a podcast that we put out almost two years ago in October, I believe. It was called Have Love, Will Travel. And
just a one season, hit some different cities.
Yeah. It was focused on particular cities per episode. And when we did our Charleston episode, the Gullah interview that we did with Lynette was a big part of that. So if you want to actually hear from Lynette and her words, and she has such a unique voice and passion.
Spirit. Such a lovely spirit.
Lovely spirit. So I'll link to that episode of Have Love, Will Travel, the Charleston episode, in our show notes today so that you can listen to that. And if you enjoy the show, we did an episode on St. Louis and
Fort Worth. And Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah. The emphasis was, you know, sharing our faith, carrying our faith with us when we go. That was really that's the love piece. Have love, will travel. So anyway, just a little plug for that. If you've never heard us mention that before, or didn't know that we did that a couple years ago, those were fun episodes to do. Okay, so
yeah, so these people, I mean, they can be North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, even down into Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And so rich in culture. So let's just jump into some of the things that they're known for.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, crafts wise, the first thing I think of is Sweetwater basket making, yes. Weaving.
Sweetgrass basket tradition, huge.
Yes. And if you've been to Charleston and been to the markets there, you have seen this. Sometimes they're even doing it live and in person. But it is beautiful basket weaving, really tightly woven.
Really tightly woven. I mean, like they
so
say
so much so that they're supposedly waterproof. And I asked Lynette, like, when she was mentioning that, so would this be kind of what would have been used when Moses was sent down the river? And she said, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy to think about. But I have thought about that basket before. If you don't know the story we're talking about, the baby Moses, as in Moses of the Ten Commandments, when he was just a baby, his mother put him in a basket and put him down the river because all of the boys his age were being
slaughtered,
killed. So she could not have her baby be killed in that fashion. So in hopes that he would somehow find his way to a family
place.
And a safe place, she, in faith, put him in that basket. But I've thought many times, I'm like, how did it not just ploop, topple over? Like,
right.
So yeah, we're talking about that kind of basket.
That was such a God-ordained thing that he ends up being raised in the wealthy Pharaoh's house and all
yes,
of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
amazing.
An incredible story.
Anyhow, so they have these baskets that are part of their cultural heritage that you can purchase. They are in Charleston and these different places. Some of them are you'll see this kind of thing in museums and that kind of thing, but just gorgeous. It is a true art collectible, though. So
yeah.
Just know
yeah.
It's not like, well, you might could find something in a really cheap price point, but for the most part, it's an investment in art. It's not just, you know, you'll see these sometimes hanging on people's walls.
Yeah. I mean, it could, a small basket could run you $300.
Yeah.
Easily. So that's what, that's the sort of investment we're talking about. But the way these really came about, I thought was cool. And again, we learned a lot of this history from
Lynette.
So the story of the sweetgrass tradition, the basket making, goes back to the 1930s when a Gullah woman named Miss Ida Louise Jefferson Wilson was hard-pressed for finances, and her whole family actually was out of work. So, in a moment of desperation, her husband suggested to her that she sell a basket that she had weaved. So, she probably just did this
in your hands
for her own use. Yeah. So she set up a small stand on Highway 17 North in Mount Pleasant, going towards Myrtle Beach. She sold her first basket that very day. And you know, it does not take long for word to get out of money is being made somewhere. And we we know how to do that.
Well, first of all, she's like, oh, maybe all the family needs to start weaving, because this I'm getting light bulb moment.
Start gathering some supplies. Yeah. Yes, we've sold it in the first day, and I don't know how much, but others in the community thought, well, if she can do it, I can do it. And so 100 years later, here we stand with
the Highway 17.
Highway 17 in Mount Pleasant. Mount Pleasant is growing a lot, so there are some, I would say,
challenges
now presenting themselves to the area. So today, most basket stands, they still are still along that shoulder of Highway 17 North. That area was once a very small and residential community, and now Mount Pleasant has become the sixth largest city in South Carolina. So with that massive growth, basket stands now are, again, wondering where they're going to go, you know, because they're dwindling as the development encroaches upon there. And there's kind of a serious problem in finding the materials. There's been a dramatic decline in actual sweetgrass materials due to this private development and pave paradise and put up a parking lot.
That's right.
So I do hope, I don't know what the answer is to all those questions I've just raised, but I do hope that it is able to remain alive, because it is a beautiful, beautiful art form and functional or artistic, either way.
Right, or both. It makes me think, gosh, I wish I had a couple of them in case it were to go out of.
It could.
Out of fashion to make those, because they can't get the materials anymore. The value will go up even more on those baskets. Well, and then with music as another piece of culture, often a lot of what I think of Gullah and Geechee music is kind of the spirituals that were born out of slavery.
Yes.
But that led to other forms of music, and you see some of the threads of Gullah Geechee and ragtime music and R&B music and soul and hip hop and all of that. So
that's so true. Yeah. We obviously heard more of a gospel focus. We actually got to go hear the Plantation Singers at a Sunday brunch,
which we should mention, highly recommend.
If Hall's Chop House in downtown Charleston is still doing a Sunday brunch with the Plantation Singers,
I think they are.
When you hear this episode, then please, please, please make it a part of your time there, because it is.
The food's great. The music's great.
Phenomenal.
It's a wonderful experience.
And if Lynette is there, tell her we said hi, because she was.
She's so precious.
A beautiful soul that we're so happy we got to know. But yeah, so we heard mostly spiritual songs and old hymns from them. But you're right, it does thread into all different sorts of genres.
Should we talk foodways?
Yes, let's talk food. Food, 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 food. Our favorite topic on this podcast.
Well, clearly it's going to be heavily rice-based, because we just mentioned that's what had them in that region in the first place, was they knew how to grow rice. So diet consisted a lot of building around that.
Yeah.
Also seafood, some game and livestock. They used a lot of yams. They used a lot of okra. In fact, some people think that's probably who brought okra to America.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's right, but peanuts.
Yeah.
Love that. And, you know, and that's clearly from an African, I make an African stew that's got chicken and peanuts in it. And
oh, wow. That's so good.
It's really good. I've got some in the freezer. I should thaw it out and we'll have it tonight after the baseball game. But anyway, another thing they used was the sesame seeds that are Benet seeds.
Oh.
And they make these little, I think we had some of those little Benet crackers. They're kind of, I love them. They're wonderful.
Yeah, if you go to the market there in Charleston as well, you can try
and some that's a Gullah samplings. Thing.
Yes.
So try the Benet crackers, or I think that's what they call them, Benet crackers.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's also a lot of the food that Native Americans had used, like corn and squash and tomatoes. They use a lot of that in the cooking in that region. And one of the things they had to do as enslaved people, or anybody who's lived in poverty knows, you make dishes that go a long way.
Exactly.
So heavy on rice and beans.
Yes.
And then add in a little, if you have a little fish or seafood that you can throw in.
Throw in a little protein.
Yeah.
But rice fills you up and can go a long way and feed a lot of people.
For not a lot of money.
Right.
That's why you see rice and beans a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. We even heard Lynette say, as far as having a meal in a Gullah home, she was like, it wouldn't be a Gullah meal without rice.
Without rice.
I mean, it's not a Gullah meal.
And there's so many wonderful, you know, things that you've had before and you just didn't realize that that was a Gullah influence of shrimp and grits.
Yes.
You know, that's such a low country dish.
It is.
But it's actually a Gullah dish.
Yes. Yeah.
Some of the things that you see with beans and rice and just these different stews that are so popular. That's all Gullah food, y'all.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, you're probably, somebody's listening thinking, oh, I kind of thought that was just New Orleans Creole. Again, kind of all of the melting
influence
pot
from the islands, the coast. And the coast that came.
Yeah. The coast coming in. Well, I think it's also interesting. Did you have anything else on food?
No.
Just to think about the language itself. Lynette actually showed us her Gullah Bible. And so when she was showing us like the Lord's Prayer, since that's a familiar passage, I was like, oh, okay. I can kind of make this out. I'll put up on our socials this week some of the phrases that I'm talking about, because I don't want to say a bunch on here and butcher it.
And butcher it, yeah. But, or even sound like we're making fun of it, because we're just trying.
Right.
But it's interesting because it's usually pretty simple.
Yeah.
Like the breakdown.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of them could speak but not, and maybe write but not read.
Yes. Yeah.
If they were enslaved. So
I'll give one example. Okay. So these are just, I'll put some fun Gullah, I don't know, ramblings, if you will, up on our social accounts this week with the translation of Gullah in English. So if I were to say Edunfa, that means basically he's done for. Like he isn't good in it. He's no good anymore.
Okay, yeah.
But give it in the right context, you could probably figure that out.
Edunfa.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a little different.
He done for. Yep.
Another interesting thing to think about with the Gullah language is how closely related to Creole, K-R-I-O, or that even sounds like Creole, that is the language spoken in Sierra Leone. So Gullah words assimilated into American English. Like here's an example, goober. G-O-O-B-E-R, that means peanut.
I knew that because I knew that because people will say, we'll call peanuts goobers.
Yes. Yeah.
And I didn't know why.
Well, there you go.
Okay.
The word juke, J-U-K-E, means disorderly.
Oh, so a juke joint. Disorderly things happen.
Yeah. So just the, you know, again, with that coastal sort of all the way down to New Orleans, all the way up to Charleston and even north of there, there's so much similarity of things on those coasts because it all came from West Africa and
That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see similar things in some of the Creole.
Yes.
Like, you know, whether that is from a trip I've made to Haiti or seeing something in New Orleans.
Yep.
Where it's a similar thing, where there's certain things you can kind of make out, but it is altogether different.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. If it would be hard if you were like listening to a long conversation, because it does take so much thinking power to try and break it down.
I don't know. I'm just thinking that I had to ask your son the other day, what was bruh?
Oh gosh, don't get me started on bruh. Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
But that's a similar thing.
It's bro.
It's bro. It's brother. It's but bruh.
Yeah.
So, you know, it still goes on today where people groups kind of come up with their own language of slang.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we should probably mention to our friends listening, where can you get Carolina Gold rice or some of these ingredients if you're not going to Charleston, if you want to just order something online or look for it in your sort of local gourmet shops. What was the brand?
Marsh Hen Mill.
Marsh Hen Mill. Okay. They make incredible
Carolina Gold rice.
And grits.
Grits.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
So I'll link to them in our show notes because we both picked up some of that when we were there. And just, you know, making red rice is a simple meal, but you can add some andouille sausage in there.
Yes, Lord.
You know,
some chicken, whatever.
Whatever
your family likes. And
if you've got remnant ingredients, that would be very much a mirroring what the original recipes probably looked like.
Your tomatoes are ripe. Chunk that up in there.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah, so I'll link to some of that in our show notes because somebody's probably listening going, I don't want, not going to Charleston, but I want to try some food. So you can make it at home. You can get pre-made packages of some of this stuff or just get the Marsh Hen Mill rice and start from there.
Another resource I will mention if this cooking is intriguing to you. There was a cookbook that came out a couple of years ago that's called Gullah Geechee Home Cooking by Emily Meggett. And she's known as the mother of Modesto Island.
Yes.
She actually passed away in 2023, but she has a cookbook that is supposed to be wonderful. I do not have it, but I did look at it in the bookstore. And it's full of all of these wonderful recipes.
She's on the cover of the cookbook,
right? She is, yes.
I think Stephanie that has the Southern Fork podcast
interviewed her. Yeah. Yes, she did.
So I'll try and find that episode and link to it if you'd like to hear her voice.
Yes. That's another one of those things where it's like, now she's gone. Thank goodness that cookbook exists.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah,
because I remember when Stephanie talked to her and she said it took a lot of effort for her to do this because she didn't have all this stuff written down. So she had to measure when she's not used to measuring.
Yes.
So all of that is now for us.
Yes.
To keep the tradition going because with her dying, it would have died.
Yeah. So if you are listening to this and you are the one in the family that holds in your head the measurements, although they've never been measured, this is your public service announcement to get it written down.
Get it written down.
Get it typed up, written down, something.
Get at best, at least videoed where you're making them do the cup measurements and you know how much.
Yes. So there you go. There's your little field trip to the coastlands. And
wish I was making that field trip. But yeah, we give credit where credit is due.
That's
so
right.
All those things we thought were just low country, southern.
Soul food.
Yeah.
Yeah. It comes from not just Charleston. It came from slaves that came through there. So we honor them with this episode and with the way
that they brought and all that they are.
Yes, exactly. And again, if you would like to see some sweet photos, follow us on Instagram and Facebook this week.
Yes.
So enjoyed getting time with the plantation singers. And
if they are coming near you for some reason, or you make your way to Charleston, look up where they're going to be, or if they're at the gospel brunch at Hall's Chop House, you can thank us later for that little tip.
That's right. That's right. You'll have a great week. We'll be back here next time with more Southern culture. You just never know what kind of topic we're going to bring y'all. Hope that you find us still throwing interesting things your way. And y'all have a good one.
Peace. Peace be with y'all.
You've just listened to an episode of the Steel Magnolias podcast, an independent show funded solely on support from listeners like you and a few advertisers from time to time. For reminders of what we just said and links to what we just mentioned, take a look at the description of this episode. They are right there. Are you enjoying the show? We hope you'll text a friend or a loved one to tell them about the podcast. Make sure they know how to get to a podcast first. And we invite you to join our mailing list to be the first to know about episodes, giveaways, events, and even those gatherings. Sign up at steelmagnoliaspodcast.com.